fall. Baby, it's not mine. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Right smack dab in the middle of it. Right smack dab in the middle. We are right smack dab.
Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is not with us tonight. But now, coming up on this first hour is an interview that Charlotte Littlefield and I had back in 2008 with Steve Allen. And he, along with many others, hundreds of others, spotted and viewed and actually experienced a large spacecraft flying through from Glen Rose to Stephenville. And this was January, I believe, in 2008. And we not only invited Jim Mars onto the program during this hour, but Dr. Fred Bell joined us earlier in that hour. Dr. Fred Bell had extensive experience in the UFO alien phenomena. Now, later on, just about a year or so ago, Fred Bell passed away. And that was after having been with Jesse Ventura and conducting an interview for his program up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Dr. Fred Bell died in his hotel room of apparent heart attack, and we don't know if that was an intentional, a heart attack induced by government or whatever. We don't know. We don't have the facts in on that. But Dr. Fred Bell is no longer with us. But Steve Allen was a very reputable, at the time, 2008, a truck freight broker in Glen Rose, and which is close to the Comanche power generating complex there outside of Glen Rose. So we have a very reputable sighting of the large spacecraft, a half a mile wide by a mile long. It flew from Glen Rose towards Stephenville and then eventually blinked out after some lights appeared in the back and some kind of a light. This is what's important to take note of during this interview. And then after he reiterates it for this second hour we had, then actually we had Dr. Bell on, Fred Bell on at that time. And then later, like I said, we brought Jim Mars in. Jim Mars at the time was speaking down at the Brave New Books. And so we were in the back room recording live, doing a live broadcast, GCN Network. And we brought Jim Mars in at the very end, so we didn't have maybe as much as Jim Mars as we wanted to, but we did introduce him and conclude him in to the program. It was very, very insightful what was going on there, because no one has come clean. About a week or so after the event in 2008, I got a wild idea that, hey, Charlotte Littlefield, let's contact, there was a man mentioned. He'd been on some programs, Steve Allen had. And let's get him set up and go up there and interview him. So we went up there towards the end of January 2008 and interviewed him in his office there in Glen Rose. When we were driving into the parking lot, we noticed a Department of Defense vehicle with the DOD license plates parked in the parking lot with no one in it. And we went in and did the interview, and it was about a 30-minute interview. He also showed us some very interesting video that some people in that area. These sightings had been occurring over a number of weeks until this large craft sighting appeared, and then there were sightings after that. So and hundreds of people in Dublin, Texas. It so disturbed the population in the area, these sightings by so many hundreds of people, that there was a large meeting that occurred in Dublin, Texas, of about 600 people at one of the Veterans Association buildings there. And so there was a lot of talk, and then Stephenville has a newspaper, and one of the newspaper reporters got onto this program and started reporting it very vigorously, and eventually, because she would not drop this story, she got fired, see? In the meantime, after this event shortly, then Steve Allen appeared on all kinds of different news. I think he was appeared on CNN and some others. We got in there about 10 days after the event, did a live video, and it's on George Butler YouTube. If you go in and look under George Butler YouTube, I'll put it up as a click-off and make it part of this program tonight. We thought it would be very interesting to rebroadcast this, not only because we had Steve Allen, but we added Fred Bell, Dr. Fred Bell, and then added Jim, later, you know what I mean? And it's just mind-boggling, some of the things, people that we put together. Jim Mars, like I said, was the last third person that we added to the program. And Jim Mars has extensive knowledge about similar types of events over the years. The second hour this weekend will be a 1 hour presentation that I made as a bonus a few months ago, I should say. We did not air it on radio, but we left it as a bonus hour, you know, for people to click off on our site. And basically, what I've just concluded writing, okay, a book, and you can find it on Amazon. We'd appreciate your help in supporting and buying that book, whoever in the audience can hear us tonight, or, you know, listen to it through the on demand. I'd written a book called Be Good to Yourself in the late 80s, 86 or so. And it was more along the lines of a self-help book. And over the years, I had been working on a delusion book. I had originally named that delusion book Social Synergy Book. And that social synergy book had to do with the dynamics of all the confluencing of all these different influences on us, you know, on every individual. And then the outcomes that we might experience depending on those particular, a mix of those particular influences. And it started occurring to me in the 90s. I got into this, the early 90s, is when I started working on this idea called social synergy, see. Today, I'm still working on that. It's a big book called Delusion, because I realize now more of what we're susceptible to resembles more of a deluded state. Our existence, our mode of existence, in my opinion, is along the lines of a deluded state. See, and that's why I'm including on this program this weekend a lecture that I gave on changing images of man. It was a paper written by the Stanford Research Institute and put out by them, and Joseph Campbell and Margaret Mead and some very distinguished individuals contributed and helped get this published and written. And it was a study about what man thought of himself over about a 250,000 year period. See, so it went pretty far back, see. And then it came forward to the more recent epochs or eras as to what man thought of himself as far as a conceptualization of himself. And then, I'll actually put up the table in there that comes directly out of the book, which you can, look at on the website. And to look at this table, go to thesecrettruth.com. That's with two T's, thesecrettruth.com. There you'll also find a click option you can listen to on demand these 2 hours for this weekend of July 11th, 2015. So go in there and check this out. But basically, This second hour, Changing Images of Man lecture, has to do with the movers and shakers in the world are trying to transform not only America but the world at large into much more of a new world view, or something akin to something you could say along the lines of a new age movement, okay? And in that idea of a new age movement, it's more along a collective state. You could say it's akin to communitarianism or communism. That's where Nikki, up in Canada, okay? Nikki has done a tremendous amount of work on communitarianism. Rapana, okay? Nikki Rapana up in Canada, along with her daughter, okay, have done a really, really fine job in this area, sir. And in putting forth some written books and so forth on communitarianism. And just to give you an idea of the way that this is playing out is that communitarianism, the idea of communitarianism, is that communities should override, the rights of communities should override the rights of individuals. So when you go out here and you look at this Agenda 21, this UN type initiative, to downstream, you could say, international requirements and so forth, whether they're building standards or and so forth, to the local level, you'll see that the neighborhood associations that have been created fit perfectly in to this. And Nikki Rapana began to notice this up in Oregon, okay? Portland, Oregon, and her landlord came to her and said, "Hey, Nikki, these people were having these meetings and they're trying to make me do this, this, and that." And said, "I don't believe that I need to do that or should have to do that." So as a result, she started going to meetings and began to see that, my gosh, the community was beginning to dictate to the individual property owner, so you didn't have property rights quite like you used to have before, see. And that's where she said, well, what is really behind this movement? And she began to track it back, and by gosh, she tracked it back to the third way, they call it, which is communitarianism. Bill Clinton was a supporter of this, what they call the third way. George W. Bush was a supporter of the third way. Ted Blair, UK, was also a proponent of this. So these are dynamics behind the scenes that we're not they're not told about or are never really disclosed to us fully. So communitarianism is an important thing to look up. After you listen to this, or go in to either Wikipedia or do some research on the web itself and begin to try to awaken to some degree as to what some of these isms, and particularly communitarianism, is. It's called the third way. What it is to reconcile capitalism with communism, see. And that's why it is called the third way, see. But what has been happening over the centuries is that the Fabian Society out of England has been a method by which to bring to England a communist type of government for the people. The overall plan is to bring a communistic type of leveling down or leveling out for the common masses, and to put them on government programs through which a strongly centralized government can start controlling through the granting or denying of certain benefits through programs to the people. And then from the top level, I see a transnational, President Eisenhower, before he left office, warned of a military-industrial complex. Well, it's more than that. It's a military-industrial, financial-intellectual complex, so to speak. So it not only takes into consideration the military-industrial, but the top level, the top-tier level, are financial powers. But coupled with that is you have a strong intellectual slant here to condition through the university systems certain ways of thinking. There are certain ways of thinking today are manifest in being the university systems becoming manufacturing grounds or manufacturing industries for secular humanism, along with an attitude that everyone has their own truth, see. In other words, my truth is my truth, and your truth is your truth. And so what they're trying to do, the real elites out there are trying to transform the world into an idea that there's a social and moral relativist idea that nothing is real or absolute. See, and then through the manipulation of the media on individuals that subscribe to this kind of social and moral relativist view, they can the inputs into the individual can change the individual, because if nothing is for sure, then they can easily change to this new variant form of thinking. See, so that's basically some of the ideas that are ongoing and going onward all the time. The students at our universities are not aware of this, because what I say in my book, Be Good to Yourself, is basically, and this fits perfectly into this transformation dynamic, is that at birth, our interaction with our parents results in a splitting off from that core real self into a false self. And this false self begins to take on a mantle of reality as being our real self. See? And then we start relating and interacting with the world, outside world, and our parents. We're interacting with their false self. So our false self that has been split off from our core real self by our parents unknowingly, unwittingly, begins to interact dynamically with their false self. So it's a building process that we begin to see that happen, see. Now, no one is truly aware, in my opinion, of what's going on, because we're all caught up in a dynamic of experiences and at real time, you know, real time on a real time basis, see, an unfolding at the speed of light at time, at real time basis. So when you're caught up in a dynamic that's it's ongoing continuously, it's hard to analyze it. And you can only look back at some of your actions maybe and say, oh my gosh, I did that, that, and that. But as it's unfolding, it's hard to see it sometimes, because you're caught up in living it and becoming it, see, and becoming into the future. You're anticipating, and you're working, and you're realizing and manifesting something that you've taught that you should be and act in a certain way, see. But later you could say this becomes fixated and reinforced by education, and the people there, they're working from their false selves. So everybody just sort of caught up in this whole deluded state. And I call it a deluded state because the elites out there are deluding us. The word and the term, the way I use it, is when someone deludes you, they trick you. See, into thinking a certain way so that they can maintain a certain control and a certain amount of manipulation of your actions. And that's the way we actually work, is that we're deluded by ideas that are not quite complete or not quite accurate. See, they're a little bit inaccurate in the way that it has to be inaccurate from an elitist view, so that's this inaccurate area that they can manipulate us in, because we can't quite prove something. We can't quite verify some of the information being presented to us. We just have to accept certain things on faith. When you start accepting things on faith, and you have faith in the individual that's presenting you this information and its interpretation. And so these interpreters then become the manipulators, and they're the priests and the teachers and our minions and our mentors, I should say, and we become their minions, and when we go out and we work and do research for them, because we believe that they are the great gurus of truth out there, and all the time we're just being manipulated by them and others. So there's a manipulation on a personal level, and when you wake up to that and you come out of that and you stop letting individuals manipulate you, you become street smart. When you stop the manipulation of yourself by institutions, then you become world smart. These are some of the ideas that I put forth in this brand new book out, Be Good to Yourself. But I say in there how to come out of this, how to overcome this conditioned state is through forgiveness. I believe that when you begin to forgive yourself and others, then what you're doing there is you're elevating yourself and you're fighting this conditioned, deluded state from the highest level that you could ever attain. And in that high level frontier in fighting this lower level of being conditioned and misled and tricked and deluded and all that, you can come out of it. Because you'll begin, the more that you walk in the spirit of forgiveness of self and others, you'll begin to dissolve this false self. And as that dissolution of that false self proceeds, then the real self comes back to you. Then there's a homecoming back to the real core self, which is very strongly attached to and associated with the conscience. So there, I believe that there's two things. The conscious state is the physical state, and the conscience state is the mental, spiritual, psychological state. And so as we gain more and more and become more conscientious, we begin to have more reliance on absolutes based on a natural law basis versus this humanistic thing that is all man contrived and created to control us. So when we go back and subscribe to a natural law basis and natural rights, and the one natural right is preservation of our survival, and that means that we can defend ourselves. And to defend ourselves under the U.S. Constitution is the right to keep and bear arms. So tomorrow, I want to invite everybody to be out in Alamo. I'll be down there with some other people. And we just want to make sure that we preserve the integrity of that Alamo. And there are problems that are occurring, some UNESCO designation of this and that. And that came long after 1836 there, March 6th, at the fall of the Alamo. But anyway, I want to thank everyone for listening. We hope that you get a lot out of this second hour of Changing Images Man. And remember that first hour is about Steve Allen's sighting up at Stephenville back in 2008. Thank you very much for listening.
And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield.
Welcome back, Steve Allen.
George, Charlotte, thanks for having me.
We've got an additional guest that's joining us. His name is Dr. Fred Bell. He's an expert in the field of UFOs and unusual phenomena. Welcome to our program, Dr. Fred Bell.
How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Fred. This is Charlotte. Good to hear you.
Yeah, Charlotte, Ben. I haven't talked to you guys in a while.
What has been? How have you been doing? Okay, out there in California?
Oh, yeah. We've been doing great. We've been really busy out here doing all kinds of things. Working on our X1 healing machine, working on the quantum entanglement products, you know, our projector systems that really help people through these hard times with the depression with these devices that we're making now. Doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah, I have both your sites, www.paradigm.com.
Yeah.
Here, and also www.raysoftruth.tv. And is that 1-800 number 729-2603? Is that right?
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that's the reach us during the week. That's where we're at.
Okay.
That number for quite a while now.
Yeah, we've been interviewing during the first hour Steve Allen. He had a personal first-hand viewing experience, a sighting of a large craft on January 8th of this year.
And we talked about this with you, Dr. Fred Bell, in the past.
Yeah, you know what? I moved down here to Temecula. We got this ranch down here, and I took a picture of about a 14-foot-tall Andromedan in our avocado orchard, and I've been sending it around the Internet. It's really an amazing picture. So I think we're about 14 miles on the, it would be 14 miles north, I guess northeast, of the Marine base over here at Camp Pendleton. So there's a lot of activity, all kinds of stuff going on down here.
You first answered one of my questions about there's a Comanche power plant up there close to Glen Rose and Stephenville where this sighting took place that Steve Allen experienced.
Yeah, now where was that at? Northern California?
No, this is in Texas. It's south west of Dallas Fort Worth area.
Oh, okay.
It's in the you could say the West Texas area, but it's close to Fort Worth and Dallas.
Cool.
But they spotted, there were over 100 people. Tell them a little bit of what you saw, Steve.
Oh, low altitude. Hello, doctor. How you doing?
Good. How you doing, Steve?
it kind of rattles you or shakes you when you think about it or talk about it. Of course, one of those up close and personal deals. But, we're southwest of Dallas-Fort Worth, about 65, 70 miles. We have a nuclear power plant, Comanche Peak, in the area, and also the Bush White House is out there, or the other White House, rather. So we don't get a lot of military traffic or anything, but we observe some lights coming from east to west that look like magnesium flares. That's how bright and intense light they was, probably 2,000, 2,500 foot above ground level. Traveling very rapid, deaccelerating real quick, came to a complete stop over Stephenville, reconfigured their light scenario, turned into a flame, and then it just simply disappeared. Totally silent, too. That's what I might add. There was no highway traffic, no air traffic in the area that day. Just unlimited visibility.
How big a craft was it, anyway?
Looked to be about a half a mile wide and about a mile long.
Yeah, so you had a big mothership coming down. What shape was it?
Looked to be a giant rectangle, about a half a mile wide and a mile long. Seemed just perfectly square, not square, but oblong, rectangle shape.
And what was on top of it? Could you see the top of it?
No, all we could see is the bright lights. Around it, it seemed to be simply invisible. All the lights was moving in unison, same altitude, same course heading, very close to us, like I said, probably about 2,000 foot up and maybe 2,000 foot over, so we was very close to it.
There was a man that saw it above him, about 300 feet or something, and he described it, what is a shiny, continuous metal?
Yeah, just no rivets or seams or anything, just a gray, seamless ship with kind of intrusions in the bottom that looked like kind of a saucer shape out of the entire thing.
So was it daylight still or what?
Yes, very daylight.
Oh, okay.
Sun was just going down, but we still could see real well. It's the twilight of the afternoon. You could still see.
Yeah, was it the lights kind of a neon color? What color were the lights?
seemed like brighter than neon. It was a white colored light, and it was very large, the size of an airplane light. Big. The light in itself was the size of an airplane. So, very bright, just real intense, like a magnesium flare or torch or whatever.
Where was that, on the top or the bottom or what?
It seemed like it was on each corner of it. We first saw it, and after it went past us, there were seven in the back, seven lights. And then they reconfigured to an arch shape, and then they stopped and directly over Stephenville and went vertical shape. And then that's when they split, and there was two sets of seven lights, and then they turned into a flame and then simply disappeared.
Wow.
Yeah, Dr. Fredville, there was some interesting, Steve discussed that the different people that saw it, hundreds or I don't know the number.
Well, over 100 people.
Saw this, and they each saw it from a different perspective, and everybody saw something slightly different. Steve, you used certain words to describe how it seemed to transform as it was in motion?
Yes. It was the same, just exactly like you said. Everybody saw just a little bit different, set of the way it was or whatever, including the the dancing star or the whatever you'd like to call it.
Yeah, sounds interesting.
They're, in addition to this, they've had sightings since that January 8th, the mothership sighting. And they're squiggly looking lines. They're like a rainbow.
I call it a rainbow serpent.
But there were some that appeared, what, above a football game, Steve, recently?
Yes, appeared over the football game in Hyco, Texas. And they completely stopped the football game because the refs was busy watching that, and the game continued on.
Friday Night Lights, right?
Yeah, finally everybody realized what the referees was looking at, and they stopped the game and watched what everybody else was looking at directly over the stadium. So,
well, these are Texas Friday Night Lights, I tell you, man.
I tell you.
They're big in Texas. Hey, Dr. Fred Bell, we got big lights out here, okay?
Sounds like you do, really.
Yeah, I have a lot of frequent sightings, and thank goodness constables and other police, actually one policeman shot his radar unit at it, and it reported back at 27 miles an hour.
Wow. How fast?
27.
How fast was it?
27.
27K?
No, 27 miles an hour.
Oh, 27 miles an hour.
Correct, yeah. When it was over the town of Stephenville, just kind of idling around or whatever it was doing.
I remember one time when I saw the aurora, it had that shape. It's like two triangles from the bottom. And it was pretty interesting.
It is.
It was pretty interesting. I got a picture of it in my book.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back in a few minutes.
Joking here on my water.
Dr. Fred Bell, and thank you for being with us, Steve. Be right back. Thank you very much. Welcome back to the Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield Brown.
Welcome back, Steve Allen and Dr. Fred Bell.
Dr. Fred Bell, you said just before we went to the break, you said that after Steve had described one of the craft, you had a picture in your book. Tell us about your book and some of the photographs.
The book is called The Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light. I'm writing a new one now called The Inside Track, but this is a book that I wrote a few years ago, and I had taken some meetings with some people that worked on the Aurora project, being an ex-rocket scientist myself and working in the aerospace industry for 25 years before I switched over to what I'm doing now. So we used to hang out with the in-crowd, and they had described the Aurora to me. And I had actually seen it fly. It was about 800 feet long, and I was jogging in Laguna Beach one night about 2 o'clock in the morning, and the thing obviously was broken. It's sort of like the one that Steve's describing. It wasn't making any noise, but was moving along about 10 miles an hour, and I jog about 9, so I was on top of a mountain over there, and there's a valley in this back before they closed the Marine base up in the El Toro Marine base. So it came down, and it was I jogged along about the top of the mountain until I ran out of the mountaintop. It only goes about a half a mile, and then it kept going on. It was being escorted by a bunch of helicopters, and then it moved along about 15, 20 miles an hour, and it went on down towards El Toro, and I could still see it as it got towards El Toro Marine Base, and then they must have got it started, you know. Maybe they jump-started it, and it lit up, and it took off like, you know, a bat out of hell. It went straight up almost at an incredible amount of speed, and the helicopters just kept on going over to El Toro, and then a few minutes later, a whole squadron of jets came in, which was unusual because the town used to complain about running those military jets late at night, so they tried to have a noise abatement. But this one had, I got to see it straight across because I was on a 1,000-foot mountain, and it was down in a valley, so I could actually look straight across at it. And the top of it had two three-sided pyramids on it, sort of. It looked like two giant F-117s stuck together is what it kind of looked like, very stealthy. Much, much larger, like I say, about 800 feet. So I illustrated that and put it in my book.
Yeah, Steve and Dr. Fred Bell, we have a special treat for us. Jim Morris is joining us right now. Welcome, Jim Morris, to our get-together here tonight. We're talking some heavy-duty Stephenville. Steve Allen is had some sightings up in Stephenville. What do you think? What's your take on that?
That's right, and it's good to be with you, and it's good to hear these people speaking out because I tell people right now, I'm not prepared to say that we've turned the corner on UFO disclosure, but you know what? After Stephenville, the thing that was most surprising is not the fact that they had this experience, because that goes all the way back through history, but for the fact that the news media, for the first time, seemed to take it seriously and report it in a straightforward, non-giggling manner. So I'm not sure we've turned the corner, but I kind of feel like that we're at the corner of disclosure of the truth about UFOs.
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to cover it up much longer. I mean, people aren't really going for it anymore. They're pretty fed up with the government.
That's right. They're just not buying it anymore. In fact, even in the Dallas Morning News, which is, you know, a mainstay of conservatism, there was a column where they said, why is the Air Force keep changing their story? So people are beginning to wise up.
Oh, yeah, especially with Roswell. They've come up with so many stories on that. It's
that's
funny.
True.
It's actually
that's true.
A joke. You know, well, when I was in the Air Force, you know, the attitude of the military, and I was there for quite a while, was that civilians are stupid and just feed them anything. Shut them up and get rid of them. That's the whole government
now,
attitude.
Dr. Bell, you had experience, with MK Ultra? Is that right? And did you get into PSI any and all of that stargating or anything like that?
Well, we got, Stephen Eberbaugh and I developed equipment that was used in MK Ultra for mind control and controlling, you know, later on it was, there was 149 sub-projects in MK Ultra, which then became Project Artichoke, which then became the Manchurian Candidate. It was all about mind control, John Hopkins University. And the big thing about that program was that the CIA was very impressed by how many civilian doctors, agencies, and universities were willing to bend over backwards and work on these kinds of projects. They would go out and rent warehouses and garages and right in the middle of a town. You'd never even know it was there. It was a real interesting time of my life, I'll tell you. I wasn't actually a subject of it. I was an equipment builder for it.
Right, and there was all kinds of people involved. In fact, ironically enough, just now this evening met a man who was a private first class at Edgewood Arsenal. And he was not a recipient of the drugs, but he was just a lowly worker, and he said they would give him these drugs, and then he would dispense them to the test subjects. And I said, did they ever explain to you what they were and what the results might be of that? And he said, no, it was all classified. He was never told what he was handing out.
They opened up six houses of prostitutions with different funds, and they were doing a lot of recruiting out of those. And not only do the women that work there, but some of the Johns that went there. That was one of their sources of people. It was real interesting to see how. Then they did all kinds of tests with mescaline, and then they got they tried to buy a bunch of acid from LSD from Switzerland from Sandoz, but Sandoz sold it all to the Russians. So then they had to do a project where they made their own LSD. I mean, it's a real interesting the stories of it. How they spent their money. I've got a complete, it's in my new book, I've got a complete documentation of their entire program. And the Manchurian Candidate thing was their big deal. I mean, that's what they were trying to do, is to put a person in a trance, have them carry out business for 2 or 3 weeks, and then not even be aware of it when they came out of the trance. And they were very successful. Then they got into remote control. First they started putting implants in monkeys, and pretty soon they were doing it in humans. Then, of course, with the Corona satellite program, they took it up into satellites, and then the STS, I forget what mission it was back in 1990 on Atlantis, launched the first mind control satellites where they used two radio frequencies. They first did pigeons on runways to make them get off the runways, but pretty soon they were doing it on humans, and they were researching and recruiting all kinds of people from their listening programs, like Project Echelon, which currently goes on the internet and telephones, et cetera, et cetera. That's how they get people to go into these programs. So it's come a long ways in 55 years, you know, and they've come a long ways.
What really amazes me, and it's actually been publicly acknowledged by the CIA, but most people have not really been told the straight of it, is that, as you say, they started synthesizing LSD.
Oh yeah, I did that a long time ago, and then
right,
and then they got into angel dust. And that's when Rumsfeld got involved with it. Surly,
and they did a ton of
angel dust. They found was better suited for what they wanted to do, so they started using that. And then later on, they got with the drug companies, and you know, Al Merck and Park Davis and all them, and started these phony programs about depression, making it look like everybody's depressed and they had all these, you know, different drugs that they're selling now, which cause, you know, schoolyard shootings and all that kind of stuff, which have a side effect of homicidal ideation. All this came from the government research.
Absolutely. Before we go, I hear a break. We're coming up on that. How do we go from UFOs to mind control, gentlemen?
We're going to get back to some dang UFOs here in a second. Okay, gentlemen, we'll get back. We'll tie it all together when we return. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.
So much more than you've become. And I have found my feet 257 weeks. But you could be waiting for a day that won't come.
Continuing on, I guess we dropped off and lost George there for a second, and he'll be back in a minute. And this is Dr. Fred Bell helping out with the show. Of course, I do my show over on BBS Radio on Friday night, so I'm used to doing shows. So how are you doing over there, Steve? Can you hear me okay?
Great. Oh, yeah, coming in loud and clear. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so anyway, what do you do? What kind of work do you do normally?
Oh, we have a trucking company, do the flatbed truck deal all across the United States. Texas, been doing it for 25, 30 years at least, so that's kind of our bag. Local to the area, know what goes on around a lot of the folks here, you know.
Yeah, that's, I bet. What do you think of the fluctuating gas prices? Those are pretty amazing, isn't it? That's probably affecting your business big time, isn't it?
Thank goodness. We all needed a little relief, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, the Middle Eastern crew over there, they panic on the first, you know, we probably cut back 3 or 4%, and that put a panic attack, and suddenly you can see the reality of what real gas prices are really all about, you know.
Yeah, thank goodness on the supply and demand deal. If we was, went from UFOs to the mind control deal, a lot of theories out there, some pretty earth-shaking things. I don't know if that's where you guys was headed or not, but
going back with the CIA, there was a thing called the Tuskegee Airmen study, where they took 100 and some odd people down in the South there, African Americans, and they studied them with syphilis, and that led in, and they didn't give them any medication until Ted Kennedy got involved and exposed all of this stuff. And then there was a guy up in New York. They started recruiting people, and there was a very famous news guy and show host. His name was Long John Neville. I don't know if you ever heard of him or not. And he was married to a lady named Candy Jones. And Candy Jones and Betty Grable were the leading troop entertainers in World War II, so that this has got some real interesting, going back into history, where it all started. And they use a lot of that intel to cover up this UFO stuff. The NSA is another one that's very powerful now. And then when Bush stepped in, we started that second Iraqi war. That was just to strip our freedoms away from us, like habeas corpus. And hopefully when Obama comes in, he's going to He's already said he's going to get rid of 147 different presidential orders that he knows about. So hopefully the truth will come back on the UFO, you know, scenario. It's ridiculous. The cover up. So big cover up was that Arizona unit that happened a few years ago. The thing was a couple miles across like the one you saw. And they call it the Phoenix Lights. And they try to say it flares. I mean, how stupid does it get? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just over the top. I mean, how long did you see this thing you were looking at? How long were you able to look at it for?
The first time, 3 or 4 minutes, and then the second time, probably about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah. So, how did you have an intermission there anyway? What was that all about?
That is very ironic. It was traveling from east to west the first time we saw it, and we went into my friend's house that I've known for 45 years, and to tell his wife, and she didn't believe us. And there was a mail carrier there from Dublin, Texas, and he just left. He kind of didn't say anything or anything. He just left. And so she says, "I'm going to call Lance." And we said, "Go ahead and call him." And when she did, he says, "Hey, run back outside. It's coming back again," because he was just up the road and was out in his car. And the second time we ran back out here, it came back from the west to the east with the two F-16s following it.
Okay, so you did have some F-16s on it.
Correct. The second
that's what happened with my the one I was describing earlier. We had F-16s came in after it took off. It was came in with helicopters. Now, were they chasing it or were they more or less escorting it? Could you tell?
They was definitely in pursuit, but it was like it was toying with them. You know, it was staying well out in the lead. Their afterburners was on. You could see the plane coming out the back of them. Been to a mini air show, and, of course, they was within 1,500 foot vertical and then 1,500 foot horizontal, so they was close to us also.
So they were really close to within a quarter of a mile or so then.
Yes, exactly. And they wasn't making any progress. It was like they were, you know, whatever it was kind of toying with them, you know.
Yeah, because when you're in afterburner, you don't have much fuel. You only run those things a few minutes and you're out of gas.
Yeah, exactly. And then of course the double sonic booms and all that to
So they're making quite a show out there. How far away is the nearest Air Force base or Navy base?
We're pretty good ways. Abilene, Brownwood, or Fort Hood in Waco, of course. We're kind of in that triangle out there in the middle of it, so it's pretty good ways.
So how far would you say, a couple hundred miles?
No, not quite that far, but it's a good stretch. Like you said, if they're in afterburner position, they have to watch what they're doing to get back to base.
Yeah, they got a range of about 500 miles, you know, if they're not in the afterburner, but that can go to a couple hundred miles with the afterburner on.
And of course, the radar reports.
Those things consume a lot of fuel. So that's interesting. So then what did the thing do? Just took off straight up and left the jets, or would the jets take off and give up, or what happened?
No, it continued west, and we or rather east, and we watched it until they just went out of sight, you know, at quite a few miles away, you know. From our vantage point, we had unlimited visibility towards the east, so you could see them just, you know, going out through there, going after it, you know, and that's when it kind of excited us. And I left the area immediately after that. I went to my house. I thought, well, you know, that's strange that our American jets are chasing this thing. You know, if there's something going on, I'd rather be at my house, you know, with my at home and with my family, and kind of concerned me at first. And like I said, I lost a lot of sleep over it the first 2 or 3 weeks out of it.
Yeah, did you have any psychic impressions or anything from it?
That's okay.
Almost was biblical, but it was too mechanical.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it might have been posing. You know, it might have been just. They're starting to do that. Remember the Gulf Breeze incident that they were posing down there for that architect guy. I forget his name, but sometimes they come in and just pose, you know.
Okay, Brady, we're back online now. Can you hear us? Okay, are we part of the program now?
Well,
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with...
All right, well, welcome back, George.
Yeah, welcome back, Charlotte. Well, we took a long break there, didn't we, Steve Allen and Dr. Fred Bell?
Thank you, Dr. Fred Bell.
Oh, you guys are really taking breaks tonight, you know?
Steve and Fred, thank you for carrying on. You're real troopers, okay?
I told George, I said,
why don't you come on my show? You can do my show for me next Friday night. How's that? That'll be fun. I'll take a break.
I don't know what, but they knocked us off the air here. Well, I tell you, when Jim Morris got into some of this serious talk, and we were gone, boy.
Yeah, and Jim Morris had to excuse himself, and he says goodbye to you gentlemen. And anyways, you guys were having a fascinating discussion. George and I were listening.
Let me put forward a possibility here in the Stephenville area.
Yeah,
could this be a government and an alien project to see how frequent sightings could affect the general population? Could something like that be going on?
Well, yeah, I think we're coming to that kind of a precipice now, but I'm not sure why the F-16s were out there. You know, that kind of throws it off a little bit. Maybe that was just a little extra show. Who knows? But that's quite possible.
You think the F-16s added to the drama a little bit more?
Well, I think so, but I mean, Steve saw him, so I would ask him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anytime you have a show, they claim they had 10 F-16s in the area later on, you know, after their third or fourth story. Anytime you have 10 F-16s in the air, you would think you'd know it, you know, but each one's worth a couple hundred million, and, you know, it just doesn't.
And they were breaking the sound barrier, too.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. So, you know, and why would you be doing it over a populated area? There is New Mexico, Arizona, Area 51, places out in the desert where you wouldn't have so many spectators.
Well, I'll tell you, the way I understand the UFO phenomenon, of course, I've been researching it the last couple of years, is that there's not just one, if we're going to talk extraterrestrial, there's not just one extraterrestrial race. I choose to look at it. Well, Dr. Fairbell, you're far more well-versed in this area than I am. There could be different aspects of this. Is that right?
Well, yeah, there's several of them. But the scenario that you're going over now is quite possible. I think with the phasing out of the lunacy of the Bush, whatever you call it, I wouldn't call it an administration. I just call it a bunch of crooks getting out. I think we'll get back to the truth. I think that... you know, the truth is necessary now, and the people are pretty much fed up with the government. And you know, there'll be some things going on, and won't be so pleasant if the government doesn't come clean and start really relating to people as human beings. Now they've been covering this stuff up for over 50 years, you know, since 1947. So
you know, like Bloomberg just recently has been trying to find out about $2 trillion that went offshore by way of the Fed.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Bloomberg, mayor of New York.
We don't have to tell you anything.
Yeah, he can't get to first base.
Because we're a private bank. You know, I mean, hello, America, wake up. You know, this is not a government thing. You know, they're all the government, I mean, all the income tax does is just pay the interest on the money the Bush administration spends. You know, it's a joke.
But isn't there possibly an awakening that happens to people as they come to, you know, look into these various aspects of the reality in which they exist? And a lot of people, you know, they hear one thing when they hear political information. They hear another thing when they hear UFO information. They hear another thing when they are relating about 9/11. It's a process of waking up to the reality in which they exist.
Well, Steve Allen, didn't this transform your life, these experiences this last year?
Absolutely, yeah. I almost feel blessed getting to see it. It is, you know, is like I said, up close and personal. It was very personal, the things right there at you, you know. It's a little too close for comfort, actually, without having knowledge of what's next to you or you're looking at. It caused many a night of lack of sleep, needless to say.
What about your friends that saw it? Have you discussed it with them?
Actually, a lot of them did see it when I did. My closest dear friends, they've kind of not tried to put it out of their life, even though it's still there. You know, it's something that they've seen that, you know, it did happen. So
well, they went into sort of a denial process.
Exactly, or reclusive, I guess, or withdrawn from, you know, of course we had a media feeding frenzy at one point in time, so these are real good people down here, don't take me wrong, but they're not used to a lot of people investigating.
What newspaper was it in?
Which time? It started out in the Stephenville Empire Tribune, but we've been on front page of Beijing, China for 5 days, in Tokyo quite a bit. Brazil's very interested.
Larry King Live and the O'Reilly Report. This one went national, Dr. Fred Bell. This is one that got, it either got away from them or it was meant to go this large.
Wow. And this was just a few days ago.
Steve was interviewed by Charlotte on January 20th of this year.
Yeah,
and in his office, there was a Department of Defense vehicle out in the parking lot when we were conducting that interview with you.
As we were coming in, we don't know if we told you that, Steve.
But that could be connected with a Comanche power plant, could it not be?
No, they don't carry the same insignia in the center of their front windshield.
There was a car out there. There was no one in it, but there was a car in the parking lot when we were conducting that videotaping an interview with you. And you know what they did, Dr. Bell? They stepped on the audio at YouTube and Google.
Oh, yeah, they'll do that. They'll pull down websites. They pull down the Brazilian government. They pull down the French website the French government put up on there. Yeah, they pull them right down. Yeah, Stephensville was a big deal, you know.
It was
because in California, I couldn't get the straight scoop, you know. Locally, you guys got a lot more than we did, you know.
So, in other words, with all your contacts, it was still a pretty lid. They put a lid on this.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we heard about it, you know, but we didn't really get the facts.
Why is it that important for them to keep this secret as much as they can?
Well, you know, they're building all these underground bases now all over the place. They're building tons of them. And there's obviously, they are trying that. And plus these 800 prisons that are built now that are empty, run by the army, you know. They have their little plan. I'm not sure what the plan is, but I feel, you know, with all this going on, but I feel it's gonna blow up in their face. I think it's already starting. You know, it's definitely a form of creeping fascism that I think it's going to fail. And I think this mortgage thing where these people, these banks sold these mortgages to, you know, to different buyers really blew up in their face and completely exposed the whole system as to what a farce it really is now, the whole banking system.
Well, we've been getting into that with Bob Chapman and some other very astute, Richard C. Cook, and it's pointed towards the derivative market that was really the big problem, and it was deregulation over a number of decades of the financial sector that led to an over-speculation in derivatives.
Yeah.
And the mortgage deal was just one facet of it that they focus in on when they report it, but it was derivatives and the billions of dollars that broke some of these financial institutions.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And there's, you know, out here in Temecula where I'm at now, there's so many foreclosures. In Laguna Beach, in my neighborhood over there on our street, every other house is in foreclosure. I mean, it's amazing. It's a ghost town in Laguna now. And it was a very prosperous town a year ago, but people were living beyond their means. They were financing people with no credit, basically, you know.
How does that tie to UFOs, gentlemen?
Charlotte is bringing us back to this, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. Well, we like to get into all kinds of stuff with you guys,
we,
you know.
Yeah, you bet.
Well, I understand, you know, to a large degree, but there's a part of me that doesn't understand, you know. So we don't know what these, there's various races of extraterrestrials. Various races are doing different things on the planet. It's not one extraterrestrial race. Apparently there's multiple. And
well, many,
we don't know what the government's doing. But the truth is we don't know what's happening.
Is that Magic 12 real, Dr. Bell?
Majestic 12 was. You know, when I used to work when I had my consulting company, I used to go over to Hughes, and I used to go to these companies, TRW. And the thing of it was, you know, it was always compartmentalized, this research. It probably came from reverse engineering. But the bottom line was, me supplying all this test equipment, working in all these different divisions and departments, I could put a bigger picture together. And having put that bigger picture together, I would definitely say the Majestic 12 existed, definitely.
Okay, we've come to the end of our program. That's a little song called Light a Little Candle. Maybe we can shed a little light on this. What do you think, Steve Allen?
Oh, I hope so. We've asked the president numerous times. You know, we deserve an answer. We're not.
Steve, you're an honorable, honest man, and you're doing the right thing. And thank you again, Dr. Fred Bell, and you're doing the right thing, too. And we certainly appreciate both of you with us this evening. And we had a little bit of Jim Mars input there, and we got knocked off right when he started. But thank you very much, gentlemen, for this evening. And you're very honorable, and you care about this country. Thanks very much. Good night.